Hello, and welcome to this podcast from the Oxford Institute for Energy Studies.
My name is David Ledesma, and I'm Senior Research Fellow at the Institute. It's my great pleasure to be joined today by Professor Jonathan Stern, who's founder of the GAS programme at the OIES and a distinguished research fellow, to discuss his recent paper, Methane Emissions from Natural Gas and LNG Imports, an increasingly urgent issue for the future of gas in Europe. That was published very recently on the 30th of November 2020. Just to confirm, we are recording this on the 7th of December 2020. I say that because the world is changing so fast. Jonathan, it's great to have you here. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you very much, David.
Okay, well, look, Jonathan, you've now authored four previous papers on the subject of the future of gas in the energy transition. So why don't we start by asking, what were the key conclusions of the earlier papers and why this fifth paper at this time?
So the first two papers were in 2017 and they dealt with the future of gas in decarbonising European energy markets and whether there was a need for a new approach. And the idea of that was to say, look, gas industry, please stop talking about gas for coal switching and backing up renewables, because everyone knows about that. What we need is for you to tell us something that we don't know. And the second paper was essentially saying, look, if we're going to use gas on a large scale like we have been doing, we've got to deal with the fact that it's at the moment far too expensive. Remember, this was 2017. And that is going to be more important initially than the fact that it contains greenhouse gas emissions. The next two papers were in 2019, and they built on both those first papers. The first one talking about the need for a narrative for gas in European markets and saying, look, replace the idea of just about coal and gas switching and backing up renewables with how is gas going to be decarbonized? Talk about hydrogen, talk about biomethane, and talk about projects. And the second paper in 2019 was looking at the challenges to LNG decarbonisation and saying, look, LNG is increasingly regarded as a high greenhouse gas fuel. What are you going to do about that? And how are you going to continue to make LNG imports affordable, especially in Asia, and still deal with trying to reduce greenhouse gas emissions while remaining profitable for the developers? So this paper focuses on methane emissions, principally because it's become a big issue and also because the EU brought out a methane strategy, which really addresses this subject in October.
Right, and we'll talk about that more, obviously, in a few minutes. But I have to say, I thought the first chart in your paper that shows global monthly mean atmospheric methane levels from 1980 to 2020 showed a really stark picture on rising methane levels. So what is the importance of this for greenhouse gas emissions?
So the importance is that methane is a much more powerful greenhouse gas than carbon dioxide. And it really depends on how you measure the time horizon of the methane in the atmosphere. So if you measure the time horizon over 100 years, which is how the IPCC countries have agreed to do, it's about 28 times, some people think 30 times, more powerful than CO2. If you measure it over 20 years, which a lot of people think you should, given net zero targets, then it's 84 times as powerful as carbon dioxide. Now, obviously, this really matters because depending on how you're measuring, you're seeing a much bigger contribution to global warming and temperature rise from methane. But however you're measuring it, as the methane concentrations increase much faster than CO2 emissions, this is becoming a big issue in the climate change debate.
A huge issue. I must say that number you talk about, 84, is quite remarkable. But one fact in your paper that really struck me was to quote, fossil fuel-related methane emissions in the US accounted for 80% of the increase in North American emissions from 2000 to 2006 to 2017, while European emissions have fallen. So perhaps a slightly challenging question. Why focus on Europe and not on other major emitters?
Well, principally because what Europe has done over the past decade is to outsource its fossil fuel production. Fossil fuel production, oil, gas, and coal production within the EU, and incidentally now within the UK as well, has fallen dramatically. So, of course, emissions within the EU have fallen dramatically, but imports have increased significantly. Hence, the switch of emphasis in the European debate from domestic production of fossil fuels to imports of fossil fuels.
Now, your paper starts by asking actually quite a fundamental question. Now, accurate measurement of methane emissions from European imports, why the urgency? So, well, why the urgency, Jonathan?
Well, really because the whole of the past year has seen increasing discussion of net zero targets, the introduction of the EU Green Deal, net zero by 2050, significantly tougher targets for 2030, and not just within the EU, but also within the UK in the last couple of weeks. So the idea is, you know, we haven't got 10 to 20 years to do this if we're going to meet these targets. We've got to start cutting emissions as quickly as we can, as radically as we can. And fossil fuels, despite the fact that in most countries they are a lower contributor of methane emissions than agriculture, and in some countries a lower contributor than waste. Despite that, the reason we're focusing on fossil fuels is that it's much easier and actually much cheaper to reduce emissions from fossil fuels than it is from any other source. In fact, in many respects, the research shows that methane from fossil fuels can be reduced at negative cost. In other words, you can make money by cutting emissions of methane.
Interesting. But in your paper, I want to get some terminology sorted out here, because I keep on hearing it in industry and indeed in your paper. You talk about top-down and bottom-up measurement of emissions. Can you perhaps explain to our listeners what you mean by this?
So there are two main ways of measuring emissions. Top-down, which is essentially aerial emissions, and you do that by overflights of aircraft and increasingly by satellites, and bottom-up, which is essentially measurement at the site through on-site instruments and also from drones which are hovering over specific sites. And the key thing really here is that when you do those two measurements, often you get completely different results, often different by a factor of five. So essentially what the aim is to take both measurements and to try and reconcile them to get a joint measurement through both bottom-up and top-down.
And what about the IPCC tiers of measurement that you refer to in your paper?
So when the greenhouse gas inventories were created back in the early 2000s, the IPCC set out a three-tier system. And it's really quite complicated. I do explain it in detail in the paper. But essentially, tier one is how you measure through standard emission factors. So you have a piece of equipment, you have an emission value, and you measure and you multiply the emission value by the amount of gas going through the piece of equipment. But that's a very, very blunt instrument, and actually you have big uncertainty factors. Most of these values are based on the US Environmental Protection Agency, and so you can question, well, maybe in other markets the values should be completely different. And then going up through tier two, you modify that by saying, well, we'll have a value for the specific country in which you're measuring it. But really the aim is to get to tier three, which is actual measurements, but using bottom-up and top-down methods, where you're actually measuring on the site and above the site the emissions that are being observed from it. And that's not, there's not a lot of tier three emissions around for any natural gas and LNG supply chains at the moment, and that's the main aim of this whole exercise.
Yeah, that's much clearer, thank you, John. But there are two major data sets for methane emissions which you discuss in your paper: the UNFCCC trade data from national inventories and the International Energy Agency, the IEA methane tracker. So what is this, and is this the solution to the problem of measuring methane emissions?
So the UN Framework Commission on Climate Change has a 30-year time series based on annual inventory reports, but these don't follow a consistent pattern across countries, and also many countries other than the Annex 1 parties don't report at all. And that means that a lot of countries we need for gas and LNG reporting aren't there in the UNFCCC data. The IEA has only 2 years of data for the tracker, but it consistently reports across many more countries and has the data for the countries we need. But the IEA has its own methodology, again largely based on the US EPA, but also scaling factors for each of the countries and the different categories. So there's no, as it were, solution to this problem. But the IEA tracker is a kind of challenge to countries, which says, right, this is what we think your emissions are. If you disagree with us, then you better come back and tell us why. And in fact, Norway did that and got its emissions reduced as a result of presenting its own methodology.
Interesting. Now, just to challenge you on that, because at a recent conference I was chairing, there was a very interesting discussion as to whether industry can use generic emissions figures for US feed gas, you know, from the field to the LNG plant, or whether it's necessary to have measurements specific to a cargo of LNG. That is, of course, far more difficult. Now, what is your view on that?
You know, general emissions are what we have now and really are not sufficient. So what you've seen in the last few weeks is apparently the French government objecting to a contract which NG was going to sign with NextDecade in the US on environmental grounds. Now, we don't exactly know the detail of that, but the aim has got to be to have specific greenhouse gas, that's CO2 plus methane emissions, per cargo of LNG or per cubic meter of pipeline gas, not generalized emissions.
Okay, but your paper, you also talk about super emitters. Now, you know, rather kind of we're living in the middle of a COVID world, we talk about super spreaders, of course, in that, you know. But what are super emitters and why are they important?
Okay, super emitters are usually accidents or negligence on the part of operators. So they're blowouts, they're pipeline ruptures, but essentially they are big releases of methane. And in most countries, particularly most big producing countries, they are reckoned that 10% of point sources account for 60 to 70% of emissions. They're most easily identified by top down, in other words, aircraft or satellites, but they are low hanging fruit because they're usually quite easy to eliminate and usually cost positive in terms of elimination.
Interesting. And you also have mentioned in the paper, and indeed you mentioned a couple of minutes ago on this podcast, the use of satellites to measure emissions. Now, I think my question is, how accurate are they? Can they be used everywhere? And if not, can you give our listeners some examples where they cannot be used?
Okay, so at the moment we have two basic groups of satellites. There's the GHGSat, mostly in North America and Canada, and Copernicus, which is the EU satellite. And they're shortly going to be joined by others, and notably Environmental Defence Fund's MethaneSat at the end of next year or maybe 2022. And the great thing about these satellites is they are particularly good at identifying super emitters. In other words, what are generally known as visible methane emissions, usually more than 5 tonnes an hour. Basically, what they've shown is that the Environmental Protection Agency estimates of emissions from the Permian Basin and the Gulf of Mexico are far too low, perhaps by a factor of 2 or even more. They've also identified large emissions in Algeria. But I want to stress, they're great for identifying super emitters. For smaller emission sources, they're still useful, but they can't identify emissions from the offshore production, from humid environments, or from snow cover. What that means is that from in a European context, they can't identify emissions from Norway, from Nigeria, and they have very limited visibility to Russian upstream emissions, but they do cover pipelines. Also limited in Azerbaijan to the extent that production is offshore. Now, the technology is advancing, and there's a lot of talk about satellites, meaning that methane emissions will have so-called nowhere to hide, i.e. that satellites will be a complete solution. That is at best premature, and at the moment is just not the case.
So let's move the conversation to the calculation of emissions that supply gas and LNG to the EU. Now, in this, Jonathan, I assume that we're talking about the need to actually measure pipeline as well as LNG imports?
That's correct. And we're talking about the need to measure them from the point of production to the border of the EU or the border of the import country we're talking about.
Okay, now, At the conference I was referring to earlier, I was asking if LNG has an edge over pipeline gas in decarbonisation in Europe. What do you think? You know, which supply countries do you think have the largest methane intensity?
Okay, my answer is it depends. And also, which methane intensity are you measuring? The data in my paper measures upstream methane intensity, which is intensity from oil and gas exploration and production. Using that metric for the major suppliers to Europe, and leaving aside Libya, which is in a difficult situation at the moment, Norway comes out the best by far, followed by Qatar. Algeria has the highest intensity of the major suppliers, leaving the US, Russia and Nigeria somewhere in between. But unfortunately, that isn't what we really want to know. You know, we want to know the methane intensity of pipeline gas and LNG export supply chains from the point of production to the EU border, which can be very different to overall upstream intensity of an exporting country.
Interesting. So why, therefore, has LNG become so important in the context of decarbonisation?
Because for many LNG projects, 8 to 12% of the wellhead gas production is needed to power the LNG terminal. And for some projects, particularly FLNG, that could be much higher. Projects are moving towards using renewable electricity rather than gas-fired power, which should reduce those numbers and make them less GHG intensive.
Okay. Now, in your paper, you specifically discuss two case studies of methane intensity of Russia and the intensity of different sources of UK supplies. Now, can you perhaps share with our listeners some of the key conclusions of that analysis?
Okay, the two case studies are really different. The Russian one shows seven estimates of Russian methane emissions, plus Gazprom's estimates of its own emissions, which illustrates that not only for a single country can there be very different estimates of emissions, but also that the company which has a monopoly of pipeline gas, although not LNG, exports to Europe, reports emissions which are a fraction of national estimates. And while I'm there, I should just mention that as far as I know, Gazprom is the only company which transparently reports its methane emissions for upstream, transmission and storage, and has those emissions certified by an international accounting company. Now, the UK case study purports to show emissions for greenhouse gas emissions, that's CO2 and methane intensity, for all sources of gas for 2019. It shows all sources of domestic production and imported pipeline gas to be relatively low, around 19 to 22 kilograms of CO2 per barrel of oil equivalent, and LNG much higher, more like 59 kilograms. Suppliers are on a scale with Norway the lowest, Qatar, Russia and Nigeria in the middle, and interestingly, US LNG at the highest of around 140 kilograms. But I want to stress these are based on benchmarking studies, not actual emissions from projects.
Well, look, why don't we move on to a subject I know is very close to your heart, Jonathan, that is the emergence of carbon neutral LNG and the need for a contractual measurement methodology for LNG cargoes. So let's start with the question of what is currently going on?
Well, carbon neutral LNG is a phenomenon that we've only seen in Asia thus far, and only for about 10 cargoes where the seller has offset the GHG content using mainly forest offsets. Pavilion LNG from Singapore issued a tender for long-term LNG contracts, LNG with a specific GHG content, and the company is developing a methodology to define and verify the content of those cargoes. The key issue here is the transparency of the GHG content, how it's measured, and by which independent institution it's verified.
So where does this fit in, therefore, with the EU methane strategy that was published in October 2020?
Okay, so measurement, reporting and verification, so-called MRV, of methane emissions from imported gas and LNG is the core of the EU strategy. On one level, the setting up of a UN methane observatory to collect, collate and publish data. On a more specific level, the obligation for all suppliers of fossil fuels, but seemingly focused on natural gas and LNG, for compulsory MRV using the Oil and Gas Methane Partnership Framework, which is really obligations to improve leak detection and repair, and potential legislation eliminating routine venting and flaring, covering the full supply chain.
So Therefore, what issues do you think natural gas exporters or planning to import gas and LNG into Europe will face?
Okay, so there are three elements of the strategy which are crucial for exporters. The first one is the proposal for a coalition of importing countries, especially China, South Korea and Japan, to coordinate efforts on energy sector methane emissions. So what that is sort of coded language for saying exporters may face similar demands from major LNG importing governments, similar to those in the EU methane strategy. The second element is a diplomatic outreach campaign to fossil fuel producer companies and countries. The EU says they might provide partner countries with technical assistance in oil and gas production so they can improve their reporting and their capacity to monitor emissions. But the third element, which is really the key one, is if those companies and countries don't make significant commitments, there is a threat that a default value will be applied to their imports until a compulsory MRV framework is implemented, with the policy of legislation on targets and standards for fossil energy consumed and imported into the EU. So this is, if like, encouragement and threat.
In other words, a carrot and stick, yes, Jonathan?
Indeed.
And a mighty big stick, may I say. Mighty big stick. Well, look, we're coming to the end of our time, and I always like to end up kind of forward thinking, if I may. So can I perhaps, pick up on the last line in your paper, which is, quote, methane emissions will become an issue of substantial importance in the global gas and LNG trade. So perhaps can I ask you, how do you think everything is going to end up, Jonathan?
Okay, well, I believe this is the beginning of a regulatory and legislative framework for methane emissions from imported fossil fuels. The methane strategy requires all exporters and importers of natural gas and LNG, as well as the downstream stakeholders, to make an immediate and positive response. If they fail to do that, I think this could accelerate the demise of natural gas in European energy balances faster than would otherwise have been the case. Hence what I describe as the urgency. My guess would be that natural gas and LNG, if based on MRV requirements similar to those in the methane strategy, may be able to command premium prices from buyers eager to demonstrate their own greenhouse gas reduction credentials to governments, customers, and civil society. And I also think that where the EU is leading, other countries, in other words, other governments, seem certain to follow. And this will result in methane emissions becoming an issue of substantial importance in global gas and LNG trade.
So is Europe going to be a key driver here, or is it going to be a follower in this trend?
No, Europe is a key driver. And the reason why it's such an important driver is that it is a sink for particularly LNG, but also to some extent pipeline gas for exporters, because you can always land cargoes in Europe. So you can always land them in Europe, but if they don't have the MRV attached to them, then you may not be able to, or they may be worth much less than they otherwise would be.
Absolutely. And as you and I have talked about in the past, we have the vision of the ship comes in, the bill of lading gets handed over, and together with that, of course, is the certificate of emissions as well. Well, look, Jonathan, fantastic. It's always lovely to talk to you, and I really enjoyed the conversation. But specifically your paper, methane emissions from natural gas, LNG imports, and an increasingly urgent issue for the future of gas in Europe, it's really a bit of a game changer for our industry. So thank you very much for writing that. I urge our listeners to go to our website and download it. So I hope everybody has enjoyed listening to this podcast. Thank you and goodbye to everyone.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from the Oxford Institute for Energy Studies. You can find other podcasts, as well as all our written research, on our website at www.oxfordenergy.org. If you would like more details about our oil, gas, electricity or China programmes, then please contact us at information@oxfordenergy.org.